Hello, I'm Mireya Loza, here with Marion Russell. It's the 4th of January, 2008, and we are in Tucson, Arizona. Here with Marion Russell, 4th of January, 2008, with Marion Russell. Okay. So, Mr. Russell, can you tell me where you were born and when?
I was born in Sheridan, Wyoming.
Sheridan, Wyoming?
Yeah. In November the 23rd, 1907.
1907?
Seven.
And can you tell me a little bit about the town you grew up in, Wyoming? Did you grow up in Wyoming?
Yeah, I was born there, and it was a small town in the northern part of Wyoming on the railroad. And I went to school in Sheridan, in the grade school, and then through high school, and then I went to Iowa State University, that's at Ames, Iowa, and graduated from there in 1930, and I taught up at Billings College, Polytechnic, for a couple of years, and then I got a job at Gillette, Wyoming, and taught there for 8 years.
In Gillette, Wyoming.
In Gillette, Wyoming. And then I seen on the bulletin board about the Border Patrol, and so I sent for information on it and applied for it.
What interested you about that flyer on the bulletin board? Why were you interested?
Well, the superintendent would get these civil service announcements, and he would tack them up on the bulletin board for us. And I happened to notice this one, and I applied for it. And my wife and I, took a trip back into Ohio for our interview for the job, and he said that it'd be several weeks, maybe a month or so, before they know whether I'd go or not. But I think it was only about 2 weeks, and they notified me to be in El Paso on a certain date. That was I think August the 24th, 1942. That's when I entered at Fort Chigas, El Paso, and that's the beginning of my Border Patrol experience.
Were you excited about moving to the border?
Well, not exactly excited. I didn't know exactly what I was getting into, but it was going to be an outside job, and so I'd be outdoors most of the time. So that's the part that I liked most about it.
What did you expect from your job before you got there as a Border Patrol agent? Did you have certain expectations about your job?
No.
Did you think it was going to be exciting, or?
No, I figured it was in time. I'd retire from the educational department, but this way, I was getting a little bit more money. My salary was a little higher, and the superintendent kept jabbing me about the salaries, and he was giving me a salary figure, and I'd remember what my little strip said I was going to get for that year, and I was always a little bit ahead of him, and I was always putting a little bit back into my retirement. So I was going to have a better retirement than I would through the educational system. Mm-hmm. So.
And so, do you remember anything about your first days as a Border Patrol? Can you tell me a little bit about how you felt when you first got in the uniform and started doing your job? Did they prepare you in some way?
When I first got to El Paso and signed in, there's a bunch of us, and we were there a week before the academy opened. Mm-hmm. And so we went on duty. We had to have a uniform. We had to buy that and get it. And then we spent two days on the day shift, then 2 days on the afternoon shift, and 2 days on the graveyard shift. And then we had a day off, then we started the academy. Mm-hmm. But we had, of course, we had a Border Patrolman companion to go on these 3 days.
So you had the Border Patrol companion, and did you usually stay in large groups, or did you kind of get spread out into smaller groups?
Those days before we went to the academy, mm-hmm. We were spread out. We had maybe two probies to one Border Patrolman, mm-hmm. and he'd, whatever he was supposed to do then, we were with him, mm-hmm. but there wasn't any big groups outside of when they come in for their, at the end of the shift or beginning of the shift.
How long was the training period?
The training period was, if I remember right, it was 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then where did you get assigned to? What did you start doing afterwards?
My first duty assignment was at Nogales, at Douglas, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And we got in, there was three of us that went to Douglas, and we got into Douglas and went to the headquarters there on the line, and they called the supervisor, the Border Patrol supervisor, and he came down and assigned us to certain periods, and then we had to go find someplace to live. Mm-hmm. And that first day there, and we got to go and each one of us was assigned to a certain patrolman, mm-hmm. for that particular day or that particular shift. And then if you go to a different shift, you got a different Border Patrolman to, mm-hmm. be with you.
Did you decide that those first couple of days where you were going to live? Did you find a place to live?
Yeah, we found finally found a place to live. Mm-hmm. It wasn't too good, but it was.
What was it like?
A place to live, and my family got there. I got to Douglas in the early part of the day, and the late evening, the train from El Paso come in, and they were on it, and we had found a place to stay that night, mm-hmm. and then the next day we got out and found a place to live.
Did you have children at that moment?
Yeah, one of them was her, and the guy with a mustache. Buried on the other side was the other one. I had two, boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Were they really young at that?
Huh?
Were they really young at that moment? Were they really small?
Yeah. I think Vernon was, what, 4 years old?
4 and 6.
4 and 6. Yeah, she started school in Douglas. Mm-hmm.
And what was the neighborhood like where you decided to settle in and live? Do you remember what it was like?
Yeah. It's, of course, Douglas was right there on the border, and it was a border town. Mm-hmm. And we'd lay out on the line at night and get someplace where we see it in the daytime on along the line. And mm-hmm. We caught a few aliens coming through. Mm-hmm.
And your first couple of days then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was in Douglas somewhere in October, the first part of October until June of the next year. Then they moved me to Sasselby.
Sasselby?
Yeah.
And what was your work like in Sasselby?
Well, it was mostly daytime work, but when we had a check on the highway, it was generally in the evening or night, mm-hmm. or early morning. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was just one man, one patrolman, and you was all there. Mm-hmm. And we checked things at night that way.
In Sasselby. Were there a lot of people crossing there?
No.
No,
we were. While I was there at Sasselby, I don't think we caught more than one or two aliens mm-hmm. at that time.
And then after Sasselby, were you posted somewhere else?
After we left Sasselby, they moved me into Tucson there. Mm-hmm. And we worked at freight yards and the bus stations. Mostly.
So what would you do in the freight yards and the bus stations?
We'd checking freight trains for aliens. Mm-hmm. And the same way on the bus depot, we'd mm-hmm. checking for aliens. Mm-hmm. And occasionally around town, as we were patrolling, we'd stop, check on different individuals, and sometimes we find the ones, and sometimes we wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. And then, after that, do you remember where you were posted?
From here, we went to Amado. Mm-hmm. And then from Amado, we went to NACO.
NACO?
Then we come back to Tucson. Mm-hmm. Then we went from Tucson to Casa Grande. Mm-hmm. And then from Casa Grande, we come back to Tucson. Mm-hmm. And then I got a promotion. I went to Nogales. Mm-hmm. And I retired from Nogales.
And your family was living in the same home all that period, or were they moving along?
No, they moved with me.
Wow.
Wow. Right.
Mm-hmm. We moved around a lot.
Yes, it seems like. And so, then in Nogales, what kind of work did you do? You were there the longest. When you started, what was it any different?
No, it wasn't too much different. I was in a supervisory position at Nogales. Mm-hmm. So it changed quite a bit because I had office work to do. Mm-hmm. And of course, there was more than me as supervisors at Nogales. Mm-hmm. There was three supervisors, so, mm-hmm. and we had around 20 officers there.
When was the first time that you started working with braceros?
It was in the early part of the 50s. I forget now whether it was 51 or 52. Mm-hmm. Now, the first time I went to on the bracero program, went down into Mexico. Mm-hmm. I went down on a train. Mm-hmm. The second time I went down to Mexico, I went down by airplane. I went to Mexico City and then rode a bus back to Irapuato. Mm-hmm.
So why did they send you? So the first time that you went in, you went by train. Why did they send you? What did they explain to you that you were going to do there? When you went the first time?
Yeah.
Did they explain to you what you were going to do there? What were your duties?
Duties was to interview the Mexicans, mm-hmm. see whether they were more or less eligible to come, because they got a lot of people who weren't fit to for the farm work that they were going to have to go into.
Do you remember why they weren't fit?
Yeah, lots of them were taxi cab drivers. Some were tailors, built working more on clothes and stuff like that. And one way we found out about them, they generally had a wart on the side. Not a wart, but a
callus on their index finger?
Huh?
On their index finger, on their first finger?
Yeah. It was a needle and thread on that hose. And we figured that they weren't going to be any good out there in the field, cotton field picking. And we were looking for more farm boys than we were for the city. And a lot of them, I won't say a lot of them, but there was quite a few of them that would come there and get on the trains. We'd pass them through and get on the trains, and they'd come to the United States and pass through and go to these different places. And then they'd go back to Mexico. We'd put them on a train there, and one day, and about a week later, they'd be going south through airport on the train. They'd wave to us.
Do you remember, can you take me back to the first time they explained to you or gave you the opportunity to go down in Mexico? Do you remember, what you thought about going to work in Mexico? Were you excited?
Well, a little bit. I knew I was going down in there and be on that Bracero program. And I didn't know how long I was going to be there, but that's what I was supposed to do. Help get these guys straightened out.
How did they prepare you to go? Did they teach you some Spanish, or you didn't need to know anything? How did they prep you for that kind of work?
They didn't. He says, you will go to Aeropuerto Mexico on a certain day. Be ready, and we'll send you to El Paso.
And so the first time you went on a train with no preparation.
No prep. All I had was my certification as a Border Patrol to go down there. And they put me on a train. They got me my identification and stuff to go down there as a patrolman and put me on a train and says goodbye.
Wow. And when you got to Irapuato was the first contracting site you were placed at.
Yeah.
When you got to Irapuato, what were your perceptions of Irapuato? Did you like the city?
I was kind of wondering how it'd be like, but it was a nice place.
So when you were working there, where did you sleep? Where did you eat?
We went in. We had a hotel there that they gave us special rates and stuff. And we ate all of our meals, practically all of our meals right there in that hotel. So we didn't have any trouble getting a place to.
Can you tell me a little bit about your routine when you were there in Irapuato? What time would you wake up, and when would you start working?
I woke up generally. I don't know what time it was, but we'd get up and have breakfast, and then about 8 o'clock we'd take out and get on the bus and go out to the stadium. They had a big stadium there. That's where we worked.
And so what would you do in the stadium?
You'd talk to them, find out where they're from and what kind of work they've been doing and things like that. And when you get through there, you'd send them along to a place where they got fingerprinted and the pictures taken, and then the the fellow that the supervisor on the bunch would probably tell him. We tell the supervisor he couldn't make it, so the supervisor informed him that he wasn't going to go. Mm-hmm. And we had one place we had a soldier, and we tell the soldier he can't go, and the soldier take him out and send him on another route out of the base. And
how would you communicate with braceros when you talk
to them?
But in English or in Spanish?
No, Spanish. They didn't know English. Mm-hmm. We talked to them in Spanish.
So, and where did you learn Spanish?
I had some in high school. Mm-hmm. I had to have 2 years of a foreign language.
In Wyoming, they taught. We're teaching you Spanish.
Yeah.
Oh.
And mm-hmm. 16 years later, mm-hmm. I joined the Border Patrol. And when I went to the academy down there in El Paso, they taught me Spanish. So, and then after I got to my duty stations, mm-hmm. we had classes in Spanish and in immigration law and stuff. And,
and so, can you tell me a little bit about how you guys would process braceros? Was there a number or a checklist that they got? You know, how did you know which braceros to talk to? Were there a lot in the around the stadium?
Oh, there was a whole slew of them around the station.
Where would they sleep? Where would they eat?
Well, they generally come early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And lots of times they'd be so darn noisy they'd wake us up mm-hmm. going down the street. And they'd take them down to the stadium, and then they'd be there at the stadium when we got there. And the Mexicans would have them all out in one bunch out in the front of the stadium. And then they just lined up and come through one by one. Mm-hmm. And the Mexicans talked to them first, then they'd let them go through.
So how would the Mexicans know who to let through and who not to let through if there was a lot of people there?
Well, they were supposed to come from a certain area, and they talked to them and see whether they was from that area or not. If they weren't from that area, they were gone.
Oh, they did it by areas.
Yeah, and some of those Mexicans were really, really good, because they'd get the person and get him to talk, and then they'll tell him just about what village and what state they'd come from. Mm-hmm. They were good.
And then they went on if they were let through by the Mexicans.
Yeah. If the Mexicans passed them, then they started in with Americans. Then they, we had, I think 4 or 5 of us that was on the primary place, and we talked to them and see what they'd done before and whether they was going to be able to make it or not.
And how would you know that? Like, how could you?
We can't
filter out those people who didn't know how to do agriculture work. Like you said that
the
tailors had a callus on their index finger. Did you have other, I guess, tricks of the trade to figure out who else wasn't an agriculture worker?
Well, you can tell by the places they be working mm-hmm. and stuff like that whether they're going to be able to do it or not. Mm-hmm. And we knew that a catchy tab driver was going to make it. He might come up and stay a little while, but he wasn't going to make it very long.
Mm-hmm. Did all of the Mexicans that you worked with speak Spanish? Were there ever any Mexicans that came from, you know, in indigenous populations that didn't speak Spanish?
No, most of the people that come in there mm-hmm. for this interview could speak only Spanish. Mm-hmm. And a few of them had a dialect that was a little bit different than the others, but not very many of them. If they come from a certain section, the Mexicans out there was pulling them out, some go home.
Do you remember where the majority of them came from?
No.
No?
It was from different sections of the mm-hmm. of Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And so you would check them to make sure that they could do the agricultural work, and then they would be processed.
Yeah.
About how many people would you check a day?
Oh, several hundred.
Several hundred?
Yeah.
Wow. How long were your shifts?
8 hours.
8 hours?
Yeah.
So you worked quickly.
You didn't spend much time on them. Mm-hmm. Because they had to be processed. We processed them one part, they were fingerprinted another part, then they were pictures taken in another part, and then all that had to be done by the next day. So if you had a train coming in, you had to have so many
people
to go.
And how many Border Patrol agents were working there at the stadium?
There's quite a few of them. I don't remember how many.
Like a dozen, 2 dozen, 3 dozen?
There's several dozen.
Several dozen?
Mm-hmm. We had some Mexican ladies, mm-hmm. Secretaries, you might call them. Mm-hmm. That was out there, and they's making papers and stuff for them, mm-hmm. and they were a lot of them spoke either Spanish or American, so we got by pretty good. Mm-hmm. I had a picture, I don't know where it is now, at one time on a Sunday, a whole bunch of us got together, and we hired a couple of taxi cabs and went up to Guanajuato, mm-hmm. and toured the town and the cemetery, mm-hmm. and we had a good time. And went up through the prison there at Guanajuato. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get a lot of opportunities to rest and to travel and to see other things there?
We did do very much travel.
So you worked 5 days out of the week or 7 days out of the week?
No, six.
Six?
Mostly six.
And then what did you do on the seventh day?
That was Sunday.
Just rest?
Mm-hmm. Sit around. Mm-hmm. And that one day, on Sunday, we went to Guanajuato. Then on another time we had a Sunday off, and we went to León. Mm-hmm. I bought a serape in León. Yeah. Funny part it was, Gal I asked her how much, and she told me, and the fellow right next to me said, offer her half of it. I did, and she snapped it up so fast.
And you got your set up.
Yeah, I got my set up.
When braceros came through the processing station, did they actually have a lot of belongings?
What?
Did they have a lot of belongings on them?
No, mostly their clothes, and maybe a change or something. They didn't carry very much with them.
And when you walked around Irapuato off duty, did braceros ever approach you? Did people ever approach you? Do you want to talk to you because you were a Border Patrol agent?
Not the braceros.
No?
When I was first went to Irapuato, mm-hmm. there was a merchant there who had been in the United States. And he'd gone back to Mexico to get away from the army. Mm-hmm. And he talked English, and he talked Spanish. Mm-hmm. And he was about the only one I really contacted or in contact with you.
But you, so then you never really had a problem getting around Irapuato and going to work and going back home?
No, we never had any problem.
No. How long were you there?
The first time I was down there, I was down there for about, well, both times I was down there for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few days, either before or after the 3 months.
Did you, when, I'm just imagining, I'm trying to learn more about the period, but when, you know, braceros were in Irapuato, and because there were so many of them, did you ever see any fights break out or any, you know,
no? No.
Anything, any, I guess, any bad treatment from Mexicans who were working with you, I guess, of the braceros?
No, it seemed to be pretty quiet, mm-hmm. as far as that goes.
Really?
Yeah.
I just imagine, because there were so many people.
They moved them out pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
If they couldn't make it, then they were on their way home.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, they didn't stay in the airport very long.
Mm-hmm. And so you guys could process as many as came in every day?
Just about.
Mm-hmm. And when you left, you went back, after the 3 months, you went back home. And what did you do when you returned back to the U.S.?
Well, the first time I come back to the U.S., my family had gone to Arkansas.
They moved to Arkansas?
Huh?
Your family had moved to Arkansas?
No. They were on a visit. Their mother and father and relatives were down in Arkansas at Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went down there for a short break, and then took them, and we went back to NACO.
Mm-hmm. And then you were working in NACO for a while?
Yeah.
How long were you there before they asked you to return to Irapuato?
Oh, I forget now. It was over a year.
Yeah. And then when they approached you a second time, to go to Irapuato, were you excited? Or did you have a choice?
I didn't have a choice. You know, when the gentleman at that time decided, he says, on or about a certain day, you will move to a certain place. You will report for duty at a certain place. Now, I've come off of it's the trouble getting older, you forget.
It's okay.
And we go. It was sort of a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I get home, when I was at Sasebo, we got in there one evening. The next morning, the supervisor there had a little piece of paper, and he came over flagging it, and he handed it to me, and it says, on or about a certain time, you will report for duty at Tucson. And you got a day or so to find a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first time we moved to Tucson after we left there, or before we got to...
after you left NACO?
We went to Douglas first, then went to Sasebo.
Mm-hmm.
Then we from Sasebo to Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And then in
Tucson they assigned you, they gave you the assignment to return to Irapuato?
No. It was after we'd, let me get this straight again, our first duty station was at Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
We'd moved from Douglas to Sasebo.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved from Sasebo to Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And after we Tucson for a while. We will move to El Amado. Then from El Amado we went to NACO.
And in NACO you left Irapuato.
In NACO I went to two times.
Oh, so you were still in NACO.
Two, yeah.
And so the second time, they didn't ask you, they just sent you.
They don't ask you. They says, you will report for duty a certain time. Now, this time I was at SASV, this guy had that little piece of paper and it says, you will report to
Tucson
on or about a certain date.
And the second time you went to Irapuato, did you carry out the same duties that you had the first time?
Yeah.
Did you have a choice on what you wanted to do in the processing station? Had you chosen to filter out non-agricultural workers, or was that also just assigned to you?
Well, I had practically the same duties in Irapuato both times, but it was the same thing.
So you didn't... It was just assigned to you. You didn't have a choice.
No.
And the second time, what were your expectations? Did you, because now, the second time, you knew what you were going to do. Were you excited about returning, or did you want to stay on the border with your family?
Well, I didn't have a choice. It says you will go to Irapuato.
Well, you were there the first time. Did you? Were you able to communicate with your family and write to them or call them?
I wrote to them. That's about all.
And so the second time, had your wife been curious about what you were doing down there?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I tell her what I was doing in the letters. So. Will you pardon me for just a minute?
Okay, I can pause it.
Yes.
The second time you were in Irapuato, did anything change for you? Did you understand what you were going to do better? Did you enjoy it more or less?
Well, I figured it the second time that I'd have enjoy it a little bit more because I knew the place I was going to be. I knew what I was going to do. And I wasn't... I didn't have that question mark up there all the time. So, it was a little better, I think, the second time I went down. Of course, the group was different because there's different people assigned to it at that time. But we had a nice group. We had, every time they had a new bunch come in, they had to have a party for them. And when somebody was going to leave, they had to have a party. And so lots of times we were doing a lot of partying.
Did you come in with a group or did you go in by yourself? Did they send you from NACO to Irapuato by yourself?
Yeah. The first time I went down on the train. And I was by myself. But there was another... couple of fellows going down at the same time. When I went to the second time, they sent me on an airplane to Mexico City and then on the bus back to Irapuato. And I was by myself.
And so the second time that you went in, there was a new group of people, you were saying, right?
Yeah.
Had anything about the process changed?
No.
No, it was exactly the same?
It was exactly the same. So that part of it wasn't new.
Did you process the same quantity of braceros?
Yeah, I think so.
Was there anything different about your perception of the life of braceros in Irapuato the second time around?
No, it was the same.
The same? In general, the you were talking about a little previously about the ways in which you process braceros. So you would check them and filter out those who weren't braceros. Then they went on to be photographed, fingerprinted, and was there in that facility in Irapuato, was there a medical examination that happened?
No.
No, it didn't happen there?
No.
And in general, were all of the braceros that you processed just sent off on the next train, as you were saying?
Yeah, they put on a train to come to the United States.
Out of curiosity.
We had a whole list of them.
Yes.
And they'd form lines and we'd call the names and they'd go get on the train.
Did you put a lot of people on the train, or were there ever trains that ended up going a little empty? Were there a lot of people? Did you manage to pack the trains each time?
Yeah, we pretty well filled them up each time.
And how long would they be on the train?
Probably a day and a half.
A day and a half?
To get to El Paso. And then when they got to El Paso, they had a certain procedure right there at El Paso. I don't know what it was because I was never in that particular part of it. So,
did you ever manage to see braceros outside of that context of Irapuato? Did you see them when you worked the border region back here in Arizona once more?
Occasionally we run into a bunch of braceros in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And we check with it, generally on a truck or something, we check with the driver, and he'd have all the cards that they had and check them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And generally there wasn't any wetbacks in the, because it was too much of a chance of losing the whole works.
They never mixed the two up?
No.
And when you were in Irapuato, you told a little bit about going to Guanajuato and going to León. Was there ever anything that happened, exceptional story or incidents with your friends there that you can remember?
No, I don't think there's anything particular that happened at that time. I know one time when you went to Guanajuato, like in it shows on those pictures over there.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice and sunny when we left Irapuato, but when we left Guanajuato, we were in a rainstorm. So we traveled home in a rainstorm from Guanajuato.
And when you traveled to these other cities, did you travel by train or did you travel by bus?
Generally, if we went as a group, we went by taxi.
Mm-hmm.
We'd make a contract with a taxi to take us to a certain place, like we went to the Guanajuato.
Mm-hmm.
We had, I think, three taxis, and we had them filled. It was empty. It was all filled. I've got a picture someplace where we'd gone to this prison, and after we got out, there was a little place around the edges where you could sit, and we got a picture of most of the bunch at that time, and I haven't been able to find that picture.
After you left Irapuato, did you keep in contact with some of the Border Patrol agents that you knew when you were assigned to Irapuato?
No.
Never? So they were never assigned to any place close to you?
No, I was not assigned. The only time we had contact was when this fellow took those pictures and he enlarged them, and he sent me a letter and sent these pictures along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only contact. I don't remember his name either.
Mm-hmm.
I know the first time I went down, there's a little fellow, this was an immigrant inspector, that was in charge of of it down there, and his name was McDermott. But I know some of the other guys, but all the names I.
It's fine. And so you didn't keep contact with them, and you came back. And we'll talk a little bit about your life after you were assigned to process braceros. You came back, and you said you eventually moved to Tucson. And in Tucson, what were your duties as a Border Patrol agent?
We had an area that run clear to Sassamy and all of that western side there, and the bus stations and the train station, all that to patrol, and we patrolled all this area out north, farm area. We picked up a lot of them. I had a brother-in-law that come to visit every once in a while, and they'd get down here and they'd stay about 2 days and then they'd take off. And I went to work one morning and I signed to work by myself, so I went in and asked the chief if I could take my brother-in-law along with me. And so he said yes, but he'd have to come in and sign a sheet. So I called him up and asked if he'd like to go out with me. He said yes, and I said, I'll come back and get you. And I come and got him and took him in and he signed it, and he stayed about 2 weeks.
Who was that? Was that Bill?
Huh?
Who was that? Bill?
No, that was Glenn.
Glenn. Mm-hmm.
I made a patrolman out of him in that 2 weeks.
And so, during that period, you were saying that there was a lot of undocumented workers that you were able to apprehend here around this area where you were assigned.
Yeah.
And that was during the Bracero program, right? These were people who were coming through that were not Braceros.
Yeah, there were still people coming that weren't Braceros.
Why do you think that people were still coming that weren't Braceros if there was a formal program?
Not too many of them got any. And according to the number that wanted to be up here and working, and the number of the Braceros, it was quite a bit of difference.
So there was many more Braceros or many more undocumented workers?
More undocumented.
There was more undocumented workers than the Braceros during that moment?
Yeah, we processed a lot of Braceros, but there was a lot of undocumented
workers. And were there some in the field, you had said that a lot of employers didn't mix Braceros up with undocumented workers, right?
No, they didn't mix them.
So then there were separate farm owners who just contracted undocumented workers?
Yeah, mostly farmers that had a lot of cotton to be picked and stuff like that. And they didn't, their association wouldn't let them use both undocumented and documented.
So they just chose undocumented.
So they either Braceros or undocumented. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was on detail over at
over by Yuma?
No, it was farther up the coast.
California?
Yeah, it was in California, yeah.
Tule Lake?
Huh?
Tule Lake?
No.
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 But what happened in that town further in California?
Huh?
What happened in that town in California?
We go out and hit a place, and this one that I remember most, we hit this place and took the undocumented aliens away. And the owner looked at the contractor and he said, can we get some more? And the contractor says, yes. Next day we went and cleaned him out again. And
wow. And do you have any idea of why he just wouldn't employ Braceros? I mean, if there was a formal, I guess, legal way of acquiring workers, why wouldn't he?
Well, you have an association there that gets these brown sparrows and puts them out to certain certain ranches, and it's a lot easier. Well, in order to have brown sparrows, you had to have living quarters for them, and all that. So darn much other things in there that you had to have so that the brown sparrows could live. And you didn't have to do that for undocumented.
So it was easier for them.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Were there ever any other farm owners that did the exact same thing as the farm owner that you said was, I guess, towards California, that just employed undocumented workers and would just replenish their workforce with undocumented workers each time you would go in and pull the undocumented workers away?
I'm not sure of how many of those ranchers out there that didn't sign up for the brass harrow.
And how, so then you were assigned, like I said, to work in Tucson. And how long were you working here in Tucson before you retired?
In Tucson?
Yes.
I retired from Nogales.
You retired from Nogales, so after Tucson you went off to Nogales.
Yeah, it's about 2 years and a half.
There was Tucson and then
Casa Grande.
And then Casa Grande, and then back to Tucson, and then to Nogales.
And then into Nogales.
Yeah.
And then in, how long were you in Nogales?
About 2 years and a half.
2 years and a half?
Yeah.
And what year did you retire?
Huh?
When did you retire?
I retired on June the 23rd, 1973.
And during that time where you were working as a Border Patrol agent on the border, was there anything that, I guess, changed in your work because the Bracero program ended? After the Bracero program, did anything change? Did the kind of work you did change?
No.
Did the amount of people you apprehended change?
Yeah. It changed a little bit. A few more. They were except a fellow.
Just a few more?
A few more.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So then, after, in 64, I mean, can you recall after 64, in that year that the Bracero program ended, any specific moments where you thought there were more or less undocumented workers?
No.
No?
It seemed like it kept building up from one time to the next. And of course they kept putting more Border Patrol on in this place and that place. And that. Now when I was in NACO, we had four individuals, a senior, a supervisor, and three Border Patrolmen. Now they've got over 300.
Wow.
When I was at Sassaby, they had we had about the same amount of, and now they get hundreds of them.
And so, when you, I guess after the program in the 60s, how many children did you have when the program terminated? Did you still have three children, or did you have more?
Two.
Just
that one there and that one there.
Oh, I stand corrected, two. So you only had two, after the program, that those were your only children?
That was my only children, yeah.
And what did your children think about the kind of work you did?
I don't know, you could ask them.
We were very proud of him, right? Fern?
Actually, he didn't talk a lot about his job.
No, we learned more about these, what he did, listening to somebody interviewing. Or when somebody starts asking him questions, we hear things. We never heard that before.
So then, your children, what kind of work did they go off to do after? I mean, not after the program, but just in general. What kind of work are you guys engaged in?
They were
I retired from the bank. Bank?
Yeah.
I worked for a bank.
And he was the head of the...
I was an engineer.
Engineer?
I think electrical engineer, but it's been so long ago I've
forgotten. His memory isn't as good as that.
Why did you decide to return to Tucson after you had retired in NACO? Why did you decide to return here to Tucson?
We bought this house in 57. And we decided when we retired, we were going to retire right here. We'd come from a cold country, and it's still cold here, but not as much as it is up there. You want to get some cold weather, you go on up there and stay a while in January and February in March.
And
it's
so
cool.
When you look back on your experience as a Border Patrol agent, do you think that that experience changed you in any way? When you think back at the person that you were before you started being a Border Patrol agent to afterwards, is there anything that you think that was kind of important to who you are? Anything you learned about?
No, retired. When I retired, I decided, but when I retired, I wouldn't have to go after another job. So, when I retired, we come here. We both retired. So,
So how do you remember your experience as a Border Patrol agent? Positively, in general?
Yes, I think so. There were some parts of it that was kind of rough, but
like what would you think? What did you think was rough about your experience?
Well, there was 3 years in a row that I was on detail away from home for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. 3 years in a row. That was the roughest part of it.
Being away from your family.
Being away from family, yeah.
Is there anything else that you can recall that was negative about your experience as a Border Patrol agent, other than being away from your family?
No, I don't think so.
So in general, you thought it was
a
pretty good job to retire from. Is there, before we finish, is there anything else you remember about your experience working with braceros, both here in the U.S. or in Mexico? Anything at all that you remember, any details that you might remember?
No, I don't think there's anything in Mexico. I kept on my second trip into Mexico. I had to go to El Paso and get my papers to go to Mexico. I got my papers, went to Mexico, Mexico City, and they wouldn't accept the papers.
Why wouldn't they accept the papers?
They said they were wrong papers. And the Mexican consul, or American consul in the Mexico City helped me out there. But they made, it took me practically a whole day in Mexico City to get the right papers straightened, at least what the papers that they wanted. Now, what the papers they gave me at the border here, that was something different.
In general, did the Mexican officials treat you well? Treat the Border Patrol agents well?
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with me before I turn the tape off?
I don't know. We when we was down at NACO, the Mexican officials and the officials on this side, both customs and the immigration, we'd get together and have a party. And we used to get in there once in a while and have some beans and chili. And
with the border officials from the Mexican side?
They didn't have a Border Patrol there. They had customs and immigration.
So you would hang out with the customs and the immigration people from their side?
Yeah, we had pretty good parties. Then we, another thing, we went down to this Mexican town.
Cananea.
They had a gun club down there, and while I lived there at Naco, they'd have a shoot down there, and they'd invite us from Naco to come down and have and participate. And I've got one or two medals and stuff from those shoots down there.
So you actually, while you were working, got to spend a lot of time on the border, and the Mexican side of the border as well.
Very little time on the Mexican side, mm-hmm. But most of the time on this side.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.